This predates Hollywood Squares even.
Oh, really?
He did these fantastic commercials for, it was a store, they were the Federated Group stores. Essentially, it was like a home electronics store. And he played a character called Fred Rated. And, you know, it's not very often you can have, you know, the Attack of the Killer Frogs and, you know, his Super Bowl commercials were always very funny. And strangely enough, that's always one of those things that's open for discussion.
There you go.
And, you know, that's kind of like a whole segment in and of itself. I hate to rush through sex. Well, I mean, sometimes it's a good thing to do that. But, you know, on the other hand, you know, I am one of those people who believes firmly that women do not speak openly enough about sex to the point where if a woman does start speaking about sex, that, you know, a group of men aren't going to jump in and say, oh, what's that about? You know, I think there's a lot to be learned if people would sit down and just really have a genuine conversation about sex.
Yeah, well, I know where I work. I work at one of the hotels on the Strip, and you know, every time the subject comes up, there, you know, it's always, you know, even some of the girls, the younger girls I work with, they're always like snickering in the corner or this and that. They can't have actually a grown-up conversation about it.
Yeah, it's really sad. I mean, women are not taught how to really enjoy sex. I mean, the myth is that women peak later. I think the only reason that's true is because it takes them so many years to figure out how to disconnect from, you know, disconnect part of the mind from the physical sensations. And it just takes them a long time to work out the mechanics of that. And, you know, if we were to sit down and talk about it, you know, we might be able to help each other so that it's an experience that women can enjoy a lot sooner.
Yeah, well, it seems odd to me that how our society, you know, we're so into these, like, these Super Bowl ads with all the, you know, this, you know, Jessica Simpson, and you got the lingerie bowl and all this stuff. Yet,
and the GoDaddy ads.
Yeah, and yet when you come back down, you know, you see that, that's sexy, and all, she's hot, or all the guys want to do Jessica's and all this stuff, but it actually comes down to actually talking about it, and everybody shuts up. It's like a taboo. You know, they don't want to talk about it.
It's because, you know, if you start talking sex, you usually reduce it to the lowest common denominator, and it's you go for the cheap shot, and there's no actual learning between the genders, or however you want to, you know, look at it. It's unless you're ready to just kind of drop all your inhibitions at the door, so to speak. And sit down and really talk and look at the person as somebody you can learn from, as opposed to, hey, I wonder if this is going to get me laid type of thing. You know, there's just so much to be learned from each other.
Yeah.
And it's interestingly enough, one of my friends from high school, we had gone out to dinner last week and we had taken our kids out for dinner, and his daughter and my son were off running around playing, and we were sitting around talking, and I don't know how it came up, but it was one of those things where we just started talking about sex. And I was telling him that one of my online friends, that we had been having this conversation, you know, she has all these questions about sex, and nobody's ever really talked to her about it. And I said, well, you know, ask me any questions you want. Because I'm not afraid to, you know,
talk
to kind of
it.
Go there.
Yeah.
And so the more we were talking, the less it was about sex and the more it was about, you know, just kind of listening to each other and learning from each other as far as just, what sex means to men, what sex means to women, mm-hmm. and, you know, why is it that so many people are afraid to talk to each other in bed, before they get in bed, mm-hmm. after they get in bed, you know, and it's there could be so much more pleasure if people would just start communicating.
True.
At least be tuned into what they really want and expect, and as far as expectations go, you know, you can't expect pleasure to come from anybody else. You got to figure out how to get there on your own.
Mm.
And I mean, I'm not talking masturbation or anything, but it has everything to do with, you know, how do you put yourself in that moment?
Mm. Well, I think if we had us as a society would have more conversations about this, you know, especially when we're younger, and help a lot of these kids, because right now these kids just see on TV, and then, you know, it's all they see, the TVs, the movies, and the video games, and that, you know, they don't realize, you know, there's, you know, more to emotional level of you know, the act of sex.
Exactly, you know, and it comes down to, again, it's everything about how you feel about yourself. Whatever you take into the bed, or, you know, the couch, or the backseat of the car, or the park, or wherever it is that you are, you know, it's what you bring to it that determines what you get out of it. And if you're looking to fill some empty space within you, the fact is you're not going to find it.
That's true.
You know, you're not going to find it in a simple sex act.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually something that you have to bring to the experience. Like, my friend that I was corresponding with online, one of the questions she had, or one of the observations she had, she said, I never felt very sexy or whatever, and this guy that I was with, he made me feel really, really sexy. I said, but the thing is that you felt good, you felt sexy because you were comfortable this person. And sexiness is something that you bring with you. It's an attitude.
Mm-hmm.
It's not how you look. It's not what size jeans you wear. It's not what size bra you have, or, you know, how big the package is, you know, and those pains.
Mm-hmm.
It has everything to do with what you have going on up in your head.
It's a
totally mental thing, and it's a shame that it takes us a long, long time to figure that out. And some people never figure that out, and they'll keep looking to other people for a definition of sexiness or for validation of their own sexiness. And you can't get it from anywhere else. A short little skirt and a halter top don't necessarily make you sexy.
Exactly. It's artificial. It's you know, the person you are and the emotions you bring to the act of sex, that actually makes the experience, you know, the complete experience you want it to be, correct?
Exactly.
There you go.
And, you know, the funny thing is that I had always enjoyed sex. I always thought it was wonderful and everything, but it wasn't until I got a little bit older that it just dawned on me that some guy wasn't going to go and be the answer to whether or not I was going to have a good time. I had to be ready to have a good time. I had to feel like I was going to bring something to the experience myself, and I had to feel sexy going into it in order to walk away from it feeling sexy.
True. Well,
and again, that goes to that my whole point of you have to bring what you want to the experience. It has to already be there within you in order for you to be able to get that from the experience.
That's true. Well, Joan, we're going to let you go at the end of our segment with you.
Thank you so much for having me on, and
you're welcome.
I hope to be back again sometime. If if you don't mind.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Thank you for a nice discussion. I mean, it's good we could talk about these issues in a wide open format. So I thank you very much.
Excellent stuff. Thank you so much, and have
You're
a
welcome.
Great night.
You too. Thank you very much.
And okay,
good night. Good night. And that was Joan Hunt from blogcritics.org with our nice little sex talk here on a subject to discussion. Went from pop culture into sex talk.
I know. I was like, what happened?
I have ratings done. I need to get ratings. This is sweeps month. February is...
Might as well get that lady from the old Oxygen. What's that old lady's name?
What was her name? I'm not talking about sex. I'm talking to drag queens, bringing some drag queens down here from Lucky Change.
Just talk about, I never thought I'd hear the word masturbation on the show.
Well, I'm desperate for ratings. I'm kidding.
Well, no, well, you got to talk about lesbians.
Yeah, lesbianism.
And dildos.
It's of HLA, you know. I can't count on just Galactica for my ratings. I got to reach out to other segments of the... It was a nice discussion. I like that. I feel like I was Oprah for a few minutes there. Or whatever the hell his name is, Maury Povich. So, and we're gonna. I'll talk about the Battlestar Galactica in just a few minutes. I'm waiting to see if Katie calls in. If not, I got somebody else waiting in the wings. But first of all, I want to. Go through the ratings a little bit for the Nielsen ratings for the networks from this past week. Of course, the Super Bowl scored the Seattle versus Pittsburgh. We know that was number one with 90.7 million viewers. Wow. And the Super Bowl postgame had 74 million viewers, and the Super Bowl postgame had 59.8 million viewers. Incredible. And then Grey's Anatomy, of course, aired after Super Bowl. That was the fourth highest viewed program of the week. It was 37.9 million viewers. They lost 22 million viewers between the postgame show and Grey's Anatomy. And, of course, American Idol was number five on Wednesday with 30.4 million viewers, and American Idol Tuesday was six. CSI was number seven, 28.4 million. Without a Trace is 20.8 million. CSI Miami, all these CSIs. CSI, isn't Without a Trace kind of like a CSI show anyway? And then Survivor, Panama, Exile Island did 10th with 19.2 million viewers. So, and that's your ratings report, courtesy of Nielsen Media Research. And that's another story from Hollywood is Paris Hilton ordered to stay away from Los Angeles man. Hotel heiress Paris Hilton was ordered on Tuesday to stay away from a Los Angeles party planner who claimed she called him a lazy Mexican and bombarded him with threatening phone calls. Promoter Brian Quintana, who says he introduced Hilton to her current boyfriend, Greek shipping heir Stavros Niarchos, won a restraining order in Los Angeles Superior Court against the socialite known for her Simple Life TV reality show and for her internet sex video made with a former boyfriend. I'd like to be known for that. A reality show and a internet sex video. That's nice to be known for, like Rob Lowe. She made with her former boyfriend. Quintana said Hilton began a smear campaign against him after she started dating Niarchos, accusing him of trying to get Niarchos to ditch her for his former girlfriend, Mary Kate Olsen. Quintana said Hilton shoved him three times and that he lost clients if they received phone calls from Hilton warning them not to do business with him, and that she made numerous phone calls threatening his life. Wow. I mean, what is she up to? You know what I'm saying? And actually, this other site, as mentioned in the chat room before, is a website called bsgautographs.com. They have a lot of, I'm on their website now, a lot of autographed items from Battlestar Galactica on there, and a lot of autographed items. They have the one I'm looking at right now is the Battlestar Galactica Season 2 full cast pose by Olmos and the cast. It is $225 for that full cast pose picture with autographs. It's signed as well. Jamie Bamber. It's like they've all autographed the picture, so that's not a bad deal. And they have the Battlestar Galactica fantastic main cast pose by Olmos and all of them as autographed as well. $150 for that. And go down the list here. Battlestar Galactica, the 360 stars, Trisha Helfer, Katie Sackhoff, and Grace Park autographed, and it's $85 for that. Once again, it's bsgautographs.com. They have a cool Viper pose by Olmos, Jimmy Bamber, Katie Sackhoff, and Grace Park. It's $110. And that's not bad. I mean, that stuff's going to go up. I mean, they have a picture with Olmos with Mary McDonnell, and that's autographed by the two of them. That's going for $65. And what else? We have a picture with Edward James Olmos, Michael Hogan, and Grace Park. It's going for $85. And it, apparently they're going to get some props from the show to sell as well. So that'd be interesting. I'm going through the Lucy Lawless picture here. They're selling for $35. She's got two of them up on the. They got two of them up on this website. And let me see, they got props. Let me see. I'm gonna go on their page here. But anyway, and actually, this follows with the Lucy Lawless story. That apparently Lucy Lawless from Xena Warrior Princess has signed on for a 10-episode story arc on Battlestar Galactica in season 3. Lawless will reprise the role of the investigative journalist, turns out to be an undercover Cylon, and her second appearance on the ensemble drama is slated for February 24th. And her new story arc will commence with the show's third season, which begins production in April in Vancouver. So I thought that was interesting. And then we had the ratings from last week's show, which is Scar. I thought it was a pretty good show. Actually, the ratings edged up just a tad to a 1.9 rating for Battlestar Galactica. And SG-1's Ethan episode aired in the 8 o'clock time slot earned a 1.5 average rating. So they're slipping. This is a drop of 0.3 of a point from the previous week and the lowest first-run rating since Season 7's Birthright earned a 1.5 in August of 2003. So now that show is, I don't know if it's losing gas or maybe just nobody liked that episode or what. And then he had Atlantis followed at 9 o'clock with The Tower holding steady at 1.9 rating. So, and then of course the Battlestar Galactica jumped up to and then the overnight, the reruns, late night reruns of the shows, Atlantis did a 0.9 and Galactica did a 0.6 rating. So you compare that with the first season, because we have now, like I say, you can compare the Resurrection Ship 2.1 rating equal is a issue. You can compare that with the 101, 33 in water, which did a 2.6. So, and then Resurrection Ship number 2, part 2 did a 1.9, and they did not have a episode in season 1 that scored below a 2.0 in season 1. So basically, most of the episodes on Galactica, the Resurrection Ship and Black Market did a 1.8. And that would be the lowest rated show yet. I'm trying to compare the seasons. Yeah, Black Market would be the lowest rated episode of Battlestar Galactica yet. And then, of course, Scar did a 1.9. So, and actually, you can tell the ratings. Beholden Steady at 1.9, 2.0. Of course, the season premiere did a 2.6, which ties the season premiere of the first season of the series. And I like Scar. I mean, it's heavy on Starbuck. I mean, it was good. We saw a heavy Apollo episode last week. You know, it's good to see Scar. I thought the action scenes were incredible when those Vipers and Scar and everything. The scenes were just incredible. With the asteroid belt and the boulders flying all over and that ship. And then we had that rough sex scene with Apollo and Starbuck. I think there's plenty for men and women to like in that scene. And actually Apollo wanted more emotions, more romance apparently in her sex scene. And then she threw him over and what's your problem? And she says she's hung up on a dead man and it's pissing her off and she doesn't know what she's doing. And Apollo was showing concern and she says, I don't want your pity. And Apollo says, which he says, he goes, you haven't got my pity. You're fine with dead guys. It's the living ones you can't deal with. So I don't know. I thought that was interesting. And I like her interaction with Kat. I mentioned in my email to Katie that at the beginning of the episode, she went from the strong, cocky Starbuck down to the, emotionally scarred Starbuck, hung up on the dead man, and Anders. And then at the end of the episode, she was coming back around. She's like, she hit bottom and was coming back up when she did the toast and she mentioned all the, pilots, names who died. I thought that was very, very interesting. And I was telling her, I go, the Starbuck in season one would have gotten up and beat the hell out of Kat, for slugging her. So, and what else? I see. My notes here. Also, like last week, we didn't see much of the rest of the cast except for brief walk-ons. I thought maybe they shot this over Christmas, so some of the cast wasn't in it. I'm just surmising. And she's the best pilot in the fleet. And I have all these names, all these pilots that died. BB, JoJo, Beano. Dipper, Chuckles, Jolly, Dash, Puppet, Fireball. Why not Dopey, Sneezy, Grumpy? That was my input. Why not the Seven Dwarfs? But I thought it was good. And hopefully, you know, as we're getting long now, this is, what, episode 6 coming up. So after this, we only have 4 episodes left until the season's over. Let me just make a little note to somebody to call in, because it doesn't look like we're going to get Katie on today. So again, my apologies. She just got done shooting that movie. So, and who's the guy to Sean's left? Oh. That's the Cylon. That's the Centurion. The Centurion. What are you talking about? That's Con Solar. He's going to tell us about his sex life next week. Are you going to continue our series, our theme? Ooh, like Merv Griffin used to do his theme nights. Ooh, remember? Anybody old enough remember Merv Griffin? He used to do theme nights, theme shows on his program, and he's like, ooh, man, I'm aging myself, but I don't know. I thought that was interesting. And like I said, I like Scar. I thought it was outstanding. I said the ratings, you know, bobbed up a little bit, which I like. So hopefully it shows the character Starbucks got a pretty good appeal to her, because, you know, the one with Apollo dropped down, and this one basically with the Starbuck driven episode kind of rose back up. So that tells you the popularity of a character. And I think we're joined by, there we go. And I think we're joined by Ebnetter. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, welcome to the program.
Howdy.
I didn't want to call you by your real name. You want me to? Everybody's got these fake names. Koenig Rules. I mean, you know, I'm Sean O'Mac. But is it okay, Ebnetter?
Ebnetter is actually my real name.
Oh, okay. I thought you made it up.
No.
I meant your first name. I don't know if you want me to mention your first name. That's what I meant.
You can mention my first name.
Oh, okay. Okay, Kate. You're not related to Katie Sackhoff, are you?
No, unfortunately.
So we thank you for being on the program. Now, I don't know how much you want to mention about your professional life. You do work for Apple, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the iPod division. Now with Battlestar Galactica, are you catching all their the podcasting bits that they're doing on the iPods?
Absolutely, yeah.
Really? Now, how's that? Now, because I don't have a high-speed internet, so it'll take me a month to download something on the iPod. But, I mean, the episodes are up, like, every day or every week after the original show airs. Is that right?
Well, there's two things. There's an actual podcast that Ron Moore does every week for each episode of the show.
Oh, the muffler again. Hold on, Kate, the muffler. There you go. Okay. The original Galactica's got a bad muffler, so...
Oh, dear.
So... Now, so the original episodes, they go up on iTunes, right?
Right. So every Saturday, right after the day after the show airs, they put the episode up on iTunes, and that's basically just a video format that you can download. You pay $2.99 or $1.99 a piece for them, and you can play them either on your computer using iTunes or QuickTime, or you can put them on your iPod, your video iPod, and show them there.
Now, have you seen episodes on the iPod?
Yeah, I have, actually. I downloaded the whole second season, actually, and watched that the day they became available.
Really?
So that was kind of fun. Yeah, the video iPod is one that I actually worked on.
Wow.
So it was kind of cool to see a show that I really love, you know, actually be a part of the product that I work on.
Really? Well, that's good. Actually, you know what? You're getting a question from the chat room. About the how is Battlestar Galactica doing in iPod's top 10?
It's consistently in the top 10, actually. I believe Scar was number 4 the last couple of days.
Really?
It's definitely doing very well for us.
Wow. Now, have you watched an episode? Now, how is the quality different from watching it? You know, of course, the quality would be different watching on TV than the iPod. But, I mean, you feel like you're missing out on anything versus watching on TV, or is it basically the same?
It's basically the same. It's formatted slightly differently. Mm-hmm. When you watch it on TV, you know, they have it widescreen, and it's actually kind of cropped a little bit for the iTunes version, the iPod version, because the screen is a different shape. It's a different aspect ratio.
Wow.
So it's not the widescreen So it's cropped a tiny bit, but it actually looks pretty good on the iPod because the iPod screen is very high resolution. Mm. So even though it's pretty small, it actually looks pretty good.
Really?
Now, and you can watch it on your computer as well, of course. You don't have to watch it on an iPod.
But it
doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be a Mac either. It can be a PC or a Mac.
Everything. So. Well, that's cool. It must be pretty cool because you designed the thing, and actually the show that you love is actually like the one that's breaking all the all the standards with television, because Battlestar Galactica broke a lot of the traditions. You know, they're the first one to do a blog, and I'm the first one to do podcasting. I mean, it's got to be incredible for because I know you talked to me in email that there's a lot of fans of the series that work where you work.
Yes, there's a ton of fans of the series on the iPod group, actually. So
it's gotta be really, it's pretty cool that you're working on something that also, the series has broken all the the boundaries, for the thing that you're working on. You know, it's like hand in hand. Here you're making it, and here the series that you love is actually the one that's really breaking all the boundaries with the iPod.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. They've done a lot to get the word out. Now, what do you think about Scar? Do you like Scar?
I loved Scar.
Yeah, I did too. I thought it was outstanding. Oh, the graphics. What do you think of those graphics with those scenes on that an asteroid field? That's where the Tilium ship. And I thought those were outstanding, huh?
Yeah, I thought that was really, really well done. And I actually, back before I became a computer programmer, I have a PhD in astronomy. And I was really impressed with the way they did the asteroid field there with all the debris and the dust and everything. I thought that was really well done.
Yeah, it was outstanding. I was looking for the things to hit the window again. Have Starbucks saying it's raining, bring in the cat. I was looking for that to come up somewhere in that scene. Because remember in the miniseries he said that what do you hear, Starbucks? Nothing but the rain.
Debris raining down on the cockpit.
Yeah, I thought they mentioned that. Now what do you think of the interaction between Starbucks and Cat? I thought that was pretty interesting throughout the whole episode, huh?
Yeah, I really thought I liked the idea of Cat sort of being Starbucks Jr., kind of behaving towards Starbucks the way Starbucks was behaving towards everybody else earlier in the series.
Yeah, in the first season.
And Starbucks kind of going, wait a minute.
Well, Hilo, he mentioned that at the end of the episode that now she's got a reason to live now because of Anders.
Right.
So I thought that was interesting, and I like that ending scene with them, like the boxing and all that, the friendship type of scene.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see that very much on this, at least this season. You don't see very much of the buddy buddy type of thing. Usually they're punching each other out or throwing each other in jail or something.
Right. Yeah. One of the things I really liked about that ending, I don't know if you listened to Ron Moore's podcast. Mm-hmm. For the show, his commentary, but in his podcast, he actually talked about how they actually had another scene to end the episode with, but what they had there was they had said cut, and then Katie Sackhoff and Tom O'Pennicott were just clowning around there doing those wrestling moves and stuff, and they had the camera still rolling, and they caught that, and they thought it was so perfect that they just used that.
Yeah. Well, that's a good way to end that episode because, the last several weeks have been kind of downers with the, the whole hooker deal at Black Market on the episode before and the whole resurrection ship and all that.
Right.
So it kind of raises everybody's mood a little bit watching the show.
I think so.
Yeah, because it's a pretty heavy, series, all the, storylines, the being hunted by the Cylons. It's a lot, week in and week out. I can see how it'll get some people down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, what did you think of? Now, did you like Black Market? A lot of people didn't like it because they said this show is kind of just plopped in our laps. What did you think of that?
Well, I liked the concept of it. Mm-hmm. I thought that it was a good thing to try to get into Lee's head a little more, understand a little more about him. I didn't think the execution was particularly good. Mm-hmm. It showed signs of being re-edited several times, which I think it was. If you listen to the podcast again, the podcasts are really great because Ron Moore talks about all kinds of little things about what problems they encountered and stuff like that, as well as things that he thinks worked well and so forth. But the basic idea behind Black Market was very laudable. I just am not completely convinced that it worked. I think that we learn things that we're going to need to know, you know, going into the final arc of the second season now.
Yeah.
So I think that that was important. But structurally, the episode was a little weak. So.
Well, they somebody said that Ron Moore said in his podcast he wasn't happy with this episode. Did he say that? He wasn't happy with this one?
Yes.
Yeah.
He says that right at the beginning that he was very unhappy with the episode.
I wonder why.
He blamed himself for it totally, which
really?
I thought was great. This is something, you know, the executive producer should take the blame for. And that's one of the things I like about the show is they have such a high standard for themselves. You know, because compared to your typical average TV show, that was a great show.
Yeah, yeah. So I enjoyed that episode. I mean, it was a little different. I mean, you know, but the original series used to do the same type of shows. They do these character-centered episodes. I mean, you know, you can't expect, you know, special effects every week on the series, you know?
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I like the fact, like I said, I like the fact that they were trying to do an episode about Lee and about his demon stuff. I mean, I think it was fairly weak, but it wasn't weak because of that.
Yeah.
And it certainly wasn't weak because of the acting or anything. That was all very well done. It just somehow didn't quite hang together very well.
Huh. And then now, what do you think? What do you think of the season so far? Do you like the second season?
Yeah, I do actually. I actually got into it in the second season. The first episode I ever saw was Valley of Darkness.
Oh wow.
And then I ran back and watched all the other ones.
you got the DVDs and all that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Went out and grabbed the DVDs and everything and said, what have I been missing?
It's an outstanding show. I've told Katie when she's been on, so, you know, I'm older. It reminds me of Dallas when it was in its heyday, you know, because you make an appointment to see it. It's like must-see TV Friday for me, you know. You know, it gets you an escape from all this BS that's going on in the world with the Bush and all that stuff. You know, yet some of it's still the same, what we're dealing with, you know, with the torture and all this, but the politics business and the abortion thing they dealt with Boomer's baby. You know, but I mean, it gives you an escape, which I think we need in this world right now.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's a combination of that escape on the one hand, but then again, on the other hand, it also is a kind of, they bring up a lot of these issues that we're dealing with, and they don't spoon-feed you answers. They make you think about things.
Exactly.
And to me, that's the best part of it, is they don't say, this is right or this is wrong.
Yeah.
They say, here's something. Look at it.
Exactly.
Think about it.
Now, we're taking odds here in Vegas. I'm going to go check the board at the Las Vegas Hilton. What's your odds about the Pegasus? How long is it going to last? 2 weeks? 4 weeks?
I think
the line at the Hilton says 3 weeks. No.
I bet it will be here till the end of the season.
Really?
Yes.
So you give it, how far into the season 3 will it last, the Pegasus?
A week.
Really? I'm thinking they'll save that for the season premiere and blow it up in the season premiere. What do you think?
Yeah, that's my guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a part of the cliffhanger.
Oh, you think it's going to blow up in the cliffhanger or what?
Well, I don't know. Depends on, yeah, I don't know. I'm not privy to any inside information.
No, neither am I. Koenig is being tight-lipped with the spoilers as of late, too. But I wonder, because Hilton has the odds at 3-1 that it won't last 4 weeks. No, so that's something. I think that nuke's going to play a part in the destruction of the Pegasus.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Yes.
They use that something. Either it'll, you know, misfire and mean to hit the Galactica and somehow wing off and hit the Pegasus, you know?
I think it would have to be inside the Pegasus to destroy it, though.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, the Galactica got hit by a nuke in the miniseries.
Oh, that's true. It survived. Yeah. I guess a question. Do you read fan fiction at all?
Do I read fan fiction?
Yes.
Yes, I have read quite a bit of fan fiction.
Really? I put up on the sci-fi board about that Battlestar Argus. Have you gone to the Argus group and read the Argus story?
No, I haven't read that.
Oh, it's pretty good.
That's more of RPG sort of thing, role-playing stuff.
Yeah.
Where they develop a story by playing it, which is a really interesting concept.
Yeah.
And there's some people that I work with that do that sort of thing. Mm. But I've read more of the classic sort of fan fiction, people writing their own version of things and
really?
That kind of stuff. And It ranges from extremely good, there's some very good authors on LiveJournal, to really, really, really bad.
Well, this Argus, it's not really an RPG. The man that does, his name is Hamilton Steele. It sounds like, what's his name's character from the TV show? But anyway.
Pierce Brosnan, yeah.
Well, Hamilton Steele, it's like he's making it into a novel. I mean, it's not really, he has scenes and stuff, but it's not RPG. The storyline is very good. I mean, it's kind of similar. Yeah, you go on Yahoo Groups. And it's Yahoo Groups like Battlestar Argus. There's links all over the place. And then I like the story. It's based on this old Battlestar that was sent off to the scrapyard. And, you know, of course, the war happened. And they end up bringing it back out. But, I mean, it's a very, very interesting story. Now, what's your favorite character on the series?
Oh, Starbuck, absolutely.
Starbuck is your favorite, really?
Totally.
Wow.
Practically the first thing I saw was Starbuck talking about how everyone she knew was fighting to get back what they had, but she was fighting because that was the only thing she knew how to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just hooked right there because that's a marvelous character moment, and I was just like, who the hell is this?
Yeah.
Who is this character and who is this actress? And I was just very impressed with that.
Yeah, she's done a good job in the series. I've said before, I think Rosalind's the fake prophet. I think the real prophet's going to end up being Starbuck.
I kind of am leaning that way myself these days. Yeah.
Yeah, because she's doing all the she got the figurines she brings out and the Lords of Cobalt and all this business. You know, and they went for her ovaries. I thought that that's interesting. So I think they're gonna give us a twist at when the show ends. They actually Starbuck's gonna be the prophet from the gods.
Yeah. One of the things I like about the character is that she has such tremendous faith, and that's so unusual in a major character in a TV series. And they present it so well. You know, it's just a part of her, and I think that's terrific.
Yeah. Yeah. And then who else do you like? Do you like Olmos as Adama?
Oh, I think Olmos is fantastic, yeah. I mean, one of the reasons I turned it on in the first place was because I heard he was on it, and I loved him in Blade Runner and everything else I've seen him in, so.
Yeah. Now, which one character did they kill off did you regret seeing leave?
Probably Crashdown.
Oh, really? You miss him?
I liked Crashdown, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people.
I have a hunch they're going to kill Kat sometime fairly soon.
Uh-oh. You think so?
Yeah, actually, really? I'm kind of surprised she survived Scar, to be honest with you.
Yeah. But you know what? Who we haven't seen in a while is Leah Cairns. Where's she been? We haven't seen her in a while. We see Hot Dog every week, but where's Leah Cairns' character? Yeah.
She might have been working on something.
I don't know. Maybe she's in the deleted scenes or something like that.
Yeah, well, they do a lot of that's for sure.
Yeah, and where's the Pegasus been the last couple episodes? They kind of been off camera.
Well, in Scar, they said it was off with the fleet, which made sense.
Yeah.
So
who's in command of the Pegasus? Is it Muffet?
I think we're going to find that out. Not next week, but the week after that.
It's not Muffet, right? Muffet's not the commander of the Pegasus?
I don't think so. I think Boxy's off looking for Muffet.
Hey, Boxy's collecting retirement on the Cloud Nine. I think he's with the hooker now. Boxy's with the hooker. Yeah, whatever happened to that kid? You know, he disappeared. We saw him like twice in the first season, and that was it. You know?
Yeah. Well, that's another one that Ron Moore actually explained. He said that they forgot the problem with child actors is they grow up.
Yeah.
And, you know, the kid grew being one size when they shot the miniseries to being, you know, like 2 years older, you know, to film the series. And like, wait a minute.
I don't know.
This is 2 days later and he's, you know, 2 years older.
Yeah. Well, they could have recast the kid. I mean, I don't think the viewers would have been too upset, you know, if they recasted him. But, you know, and actually, Koenig Rules is saying that don't forget that Billy's number is up soon, too.
Yes, that's true. Next week, this week, I should say.
Yeah, what's Rosalind going to do without Billy? You know, that's why they should bring me up there. I'll be the new Billy. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely. And my first order of business would be to have sex with Six, I think. Yeah. She should be in Billy's head, too, you know, Six.
There you go.
Because what's her name?
You can have Six. I'll take Starbucks.
D is going to end up with Starbuck, probably. Or with, I'm sorry. So if I hope he ends up with Starbuck.
That would be an interesting twist.
Like an Oreo cookie. But no, I think Dee's going to end up with Apollo, and you know, right?
And right, Dee ends up with Apollo at least for the short term, and Starbuck ends up with Anders.
Now, when's he going to show up? Now, you know, we're getting.
I still think she's a Cylon.
Who, Starbuck? Who? Yeah.
Well, I don't think. I think that in some ways that he's looking at this deficit in another way. If one assumes from a Republican standpoint that the government is the enemy, you want to destroy what the government is capable and able to do. And it severely restricts government action if they don't have money. And if all the money that the government is collecting is going off to paying off the debt, they have no discretionary spending available to them, so there's going to be no social programs, there's going to be no Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, education, energy research, any of those things that people say that they want. Mm-hmm. Instead, the only money that is going to be available or be used by the government is going to go toward national defense or mm-hmm. the military.
Yeah.
This has been written about in Republican ideology, if you will, for a very long time. And it's not a new idea. It just manifests itself very clearly in his actions. Now, I'm sure that there are people that could look at it a little differently, but it's very irresponsible spending, unless you look at it in longer term and say that they're trying to destroy what the government is actually capable of doing.
Hmm. I don't know. And then also, you want to talk about the New Orleans relief. Yeah, I read that article about Nagin trying to get the foreign countries to pitch in some money. What did you think about that?
Yeah, I just was listening to you just a couple minutes ago talking about that.
Uh-huh.
It's a pretty sad state when the mayor of one of the largest cities in our country, and certainly one of the most historical, is asking for relief from other countries because of... you know, the abdication by the federal government of following up with what they said they were going to do. It's not as if they're not capable of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's that he doesn't want to, or he's passing the buck to somebody else, saying, well, it reminds me of the other day, I think it was last week, when Bush was asked about New Orleans and what was going on, and he said that, well, we're waiting for some kind of plan. You know, we haven't received any plan from mm-hmm. the state of Louisiana or the city in order to implement anything. And it turned out that 2 days previously, his White House had turned down a plan that had been proposed and was backed by the entire congressional delegation from Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's another thing that didn't get played as highly in the press.
Yeah.
As the fact that he was saying that he had no plan.
It's unbelievable. I mean, what's the Bush supposed to do? Just give Nagin a blank check for the New Orleans? Let him spend whatever they want? I mean, it's crazy. You know?
Yeah, you certainly don't want to do that.
No.
But given the situation, it would seem that the federal government is in the best position to kind of coordinate activities mm-hmm. and spending and reconstruction, considering it's crossing so many boundaries, state, county, parish, whatever, I'm not that familiar down there, or, you know, the state going across into Mississippi, into Texas, and whatever, you know, mm-hmm. that the federal government should be kind of coordinating who's doing what down there, and should bring a point, and it seems quite clear from what has not transpired that is clearly not occurring.
Yeah. Now, what about these cartoons in the Muslims? I mean, it's like all hell's breaking loose over there, you know, to coin a phrase, you know what I mean?
Well, I've been reading a great deal about what's been going on, not only in the mainstream media, but also on the blogs. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, some people are saying, oh, people should be more aware of the sensibilities of Muslims, or it's a First Amendment issue,
mm-hmm.
it's a clash of cultures. And my particular take on this is that a lot of what has transpired over the past week or so has really been pushed by political extremists. You know, the burnings in Syria and in Lebanon, where you have a big Syrian influence, have been really blown up. And Syria is a very secular country, and they're very much afraid of... the extreme fundamentalist Muslims, if they wanted to control that, they could have. Iran, and this is a very interesting thing that I heard on NPR today, is that there's a Wall Street Journal reporter who's been in Denmark, and he said that actually in the Shiite areas of Muslim countries, that there are depictions of Muhammad. It's in the Sunni areas where there's not. And you notice there have been huge riots in Iran about this issue. So it seems to a degree that this is being played for political purposes in the Muslim world. Once again, you know, trying to fan the flames of hate against the West. The other issue is clearly a First Amendment one in which, or a free speech one in which, you know, people either believe in free speech or you don't. You know, there's the issue in the United States where you can't yell fire in a theater, but the point of free speech is to be able to say things that are culturally, socially inappropriate. And here, I don't know that it was the intent of the Danish newspaper to actually, you know, push the boundaries of free speech. I think in a lot of ways they were a little bit clueless about what was going on and maybe a little bit stupid about things. But it has played out in that you either respect an individual's right to say and think what he wants or you don't. And we have a really serious problem with how this is being perceived in the Muslim world, and extremists being in control in many of these areas and controlling the press, controlling the media, controlling the intelligentsia to the point where they can really not contradict these extremists for fear of their lives.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, it's just a cartoon. It's like they're expecting the government of Denmark to apologize for the newspaper. As I said, when we had that problem with the Newsweek, you know, it wasn't up to the United States government to apologize for Newsweek when they had the problem with the Quran supposedly getting flushed down the toilet. Remember all that?
Right.
They never, you know, we never would have thought about that. You know, the government has no right to apologize for a private company like a newspaper.
Well, then in Afghanistan, there were big riots that were right outside an American compound, and they were trying to get into that compound, saying that it had something to do with the United States, which was clearly not the case either.
Yeah.
You know, the people there have obviously a problem of education, of exposure. They live in a very totalitarian type of environment. They're told what to do. It's a huge problem. It's going to be an ongoing problem. It's not going to be cleared up easily. This type of issue is an either-or thing. There's no kind of middle ground. It's not as if you can compromise about free speech. You either have it or you don't. And, you know, one of the things that's so important about the society that we live in is that we can make fun of other people and other ways of thinking and other, cultures or individuals or way you dress or the way you think. And that's what makes our society so vital.
Yeah.
And you go up against a culture or society like what exists in many areas of the Middle East, and that is a real problem because they are very close-minded.
True. Now, what about the wiretaps? Are you watching those hearings they had with Alberto Gonzalez?
Well, to be honest, I didn't see any reason to watch a cheerleader. He's not as pretty as the ones I put on my website. You know, what's he going to say? This is a guy who backed torture, and secret prisons and everything else that's been going on. You expect him to sit down there and say, oh, gee, we really should have come and talked to Congress or, you know, had more meetings about the appropriateness of your 1978 law and how it applies to this, or, you know, the courts that you set up specifically for these types of things that we're now totally ignoring. No, he's going to completely back the president. There's a certain element in my mind is watching this. I know what he's going to say, and it's going to be grandstanding on the part of the the senators in these hearings.
And they went in. Well, he didn't want to be. He wasn't sworn in, right? They had a big to do over that swearing in business, I guess. He didn't want to be sworn in, and then the Democrats saying he should be sworn in, and then I guess he offered to be sworn in, and they said, oh, no, we're not going to swear you in. It's like, what is going on there, you know, like a bunch of kids.
It's going back to the energy hearing fiasco, the same sort of thing when they found after the fact that all the energy CEOs were lying about what was going on. You know, I find it, you know, that's pretty interesting, too. You know, Karl Rove, I guess, has been threatening to blacklist any Republican who votes against the president having to do with any of these wiretap issues.
Hello? Uh-oh. Uh-oh. He's petering out there. Chip, are you there, sir? I think his cell phone might have crapped.
I can still hear you.
Oh, okay, there you go. Okay, we lost you for a second there. We lost you. It's the tapping there. I'm telling you, it's the NSA is tapping LV Rocks.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you heard me, but I was saying that Karl Rove has threatened to blacklist any Republican who votes against the president having to do with any of these wiretap issues.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And so he's been putting a lot of political pressure on a lot of the senators. And congressmen are coming up for re-election in November, saying they aren't going to get any money or support from the White House in any way.
Well, hopefully he'll be indicted before all this happens. Get that, you know, he's like the Darth Vader of American politics. Get him out of the way. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know that then he has to actually move out. You notice that Scooter Libby's trial was scheduled for January next year, which is clearly after next November's election. So even if Rove is indicted or something, that he's probably going to say, well, I'm going to wait until after November before I do anything, because the court date's not going to be set until probably, you know, 2009 or something, if they have their way.
There is
some advantage, you know, and as far as Republicans are concerned, you know, it's a great political advantage to be able to control the courts and, you know, the judges and, not only the House of Representatives and Senate, you know, there definitely are some political advantages to that.
Yeah, they're acting like a bunch of pigs and slop. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's like, what is this? What's going on here? I mean, they're hoping and they're praying that the Democrats don't take one of the houses of Congress, because when that happens, the hearings will start. They'll be going after Bush like crazy.
They definitely will.
Yeah.
They're going to do everything they can to stop them, and the Democrats really have to start getting their act together and focusing.
Mm-hmm.
One of the problems with Democrats, and it's a sort of the standing joke, is that you know you're a Democrat if you never agree with anybody else, because they do not move in lockstep like many of the Republicans do. You know, they're very diversified. They have many different opinions. There's no real clear-cut plan, no clear-cut leader, because everybody says, well, screw you.
Yeah.
Why are you? Who put you in charge?
Yeah.
You know, they kind of go to their own drumbeat. And in a way, it's a disadvantage. You would hope that they can they'll get their act together, and you hope one or many people certainly hope that occurs by November, but that remains to be seen.
Yeah, I mean, you see, the Democrats, like I said, they got to get their acts together, but they said, I was watching, I was a Hardball, that the way the districts are, you know, gerrymandered, that it's pretty much going to be impossible for the Democrats to really take control of the House, you know, and the only hope is the Senate.
Well, I think that that's very true.
Yeah.
I live in a district which is very Democratic. The woman who who has been elected to the House here is really unbeatable. I mean, she keeps winning re-election by like 75% of the vote.
Mm.
And even within the Democratic primary, it'd be next to impossible for anybody to beat her.
Mm.
And if that's just one example of many, many districts throughout the country where people have really no opportunity to change who their representatives are until that person decides they want to leave.
That's true. As I mentioned at the top of the program, that Jack Carter, Jimmy Carter's son, is running for Senate here in Nevada, and he really doesn't stand a chance against, you know, we have John Ensign as the incumbent, and his district is pretty much, you know, Henderson, which is a lot of yuppies live out there, and you have the Reno area. So I mean, he's pretty comfortable. He's, you know, he's been around for years. So it's gonna be impossible for him, I think, to defeat John Ensign. So I mean, even with the name of Carter, you know.
Well, you know, people get in power and they play to win, and in that sense, they want to stay in their their jobs. There, yeah. there are a lot of advantages, so they do everything they can to rig the system so that they keep it.
Yeah.
You know, you protect your own back, you protect your house, you protect what you've got, and they're doing the same thing, and they're very successful. It's unfortunate that there's no way to kind of bring the system back into some kind of balance so that there are competitive races in almost every district, which mm-hmm. would be a lot healthier for people all throughout the country.
Yeah, I don't know what it's going to take. You know, people keep saying public financing of you know, Senate and congressional campaigns. I don't know if that's it. I think probably transparent campaign finance reports or something like that. They're, you know, as soon as they get a donation, it's posted on a website. I really, that's it's beyond my pay grade, as they say. You know what I mean?
Yes, it's a pretty complicated issue. I think that you know, that sometime in the future we ought to really sort of concentrate on that when it really comes up in the Senate or in Congress again, that maybe you and I should talk about that as just a subject and get into some of the details, because I think that it does bring up a lot of, whether it's free speech issues about financing and money and how much you can give and people's interaction or participation in the political process. They really bring up a lot of issues, which I think you know, everybody might want to think about and talk
Absolutely.
About.
Well, we should put that on the agenda for 2 weeks when you come back, definitely.
And now, that'd be great.
Before you let you go, who's your player of the week?
Well, this past week, our president, President George, was our political sports player of the week.
Really?
And I did that not because, and I said this on my website, not because of his great play or his great success, but more because he clearly dominated the news, other than what was going on in the Middle East with all of these cartoon things, all with his State of the Union speech and its aftermath.
Really?
And I was saying that, you know, one of the things that was so sort of sad about that speech is that I think people always look at the president with a certain amount of hope. Even if you don't like him, you didn't vote for him, you want him to be a true leader. And you would hope, or I think that many people look at him with all the problems that have transpired over especially the past year, and if you look at the past 5 years, that maybe, just maybe, he's going to like really get it and do something constructive about fixing how he manages or the type of people that he has involved, or doing something that's substantial about the discrepancy between rich and poor, about health care, about these energy issues, about having some real compassion as a compassionate conservative for what's going on.
Well, Chip, we're at the end of our segment. Thank you very much.
Well, you're thank very, you. Very welcome,
you're
Sean.
You're welcome. Everybody
and,
go to...
you have a good week, and I'll
you.
Talk to you later.
All right, thank you very much.
And
bye-bye. Bye-bye. That was Chip Sports, Chip Spears of PoliticalSports.com with our political sports discussion. Very good. Very nice discussion. And we'll be back in just a few minutes with Joan Hunt from BlogCritics.org. We'll be right back.
that the humans remain entertained until the end.
And we are back for the second hour of Subject to Discussion. I'm Sean O'Mac, Sean Daly. Call me anything you want. Just do not call me late for dinner. And we'll be joined now by Joan Hunt from blogcritics.org. Joan, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi.
How are you?
Fine. Welcome to the program.
Nice to be here.
Yes.
Thanks for having me.
You know, no problem at all. Give the listeners out there a little background about yourself, because you're a new contributor from Blog Critics to the program.
Yes. Well, I'm an editor of the TV film section, and basically I've been a blogger for several years now, and I dabble in a little bit of everything.
Really? Now your background, you have a lot of jazz in your background, is that correct?
Actually, blues.
Blues? Oh. Like in a part of a band, or?
No, just a fan, and an avid fan, actually.
Well, good for you. Now, the blues, now how does the blues, everybody's harping on New Orleans. How do you think the musical community is going to rebound in New Orleans?
Well, I think the musical community is going to come out fine.
Really?
There are several organizations that have, come up in support of the musicians and helping them replace their instruments. That type of thing. People who decided to stick with New Orleans, they're gonna be great. Mm-hmm. You know, they're gonna find that people are gonna be coming back looking for them. Tracking them down so that they can hear them play, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And the ones who didn't stay, they've relocated.
Really?
I mean, it's just that simple.
Yeah.
But the nice thing is that there were several organizations that jumped in right away to help musicians replace what they've lost.
I know Wynton Marsalis. He's spearheading the recovery of the music scene in New Orleans. So good for him.
Yeah, I saw that. He and Harry Connick Jr.
Mm-hmm.
They've been all over it.
Yeah, very good. And honestly, I don't know if you know that. Also, John Goodman from Roseanne. He's involved too, because he's actually from that area.
Yep.
Yeah.
And surprisingly enough, he's a blues brother.
There you go. And then actually, we have the House of Blues here in Vegas. I'm telling you, Aykroyd shows up every once in a while with Jim Belushi. They do a Blues Brothers show over at the House of Blues here in Vegas.
Yes, yeah. I hear about it. I've never been to see it.
Oh, you have to. You know, same thing with Katie Sackhoff from Battlestar Galactica. She's never been to Vegas. You got to come to Vegas at least once in your life. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I've been to Vegas.
Oh.
Trust me. In fact, I was supposed to come out at the end of the month, but it's not going to happen this month.
No.
But it'll happen soon enough.
Well, also, you said you watched the Super Bowl for the first time with your significant other.
Yes.
How was
it? My boyfriend, in the year that we've been going out,
mm-hmm.
for some reason we've watched football together. We just haven't watched, we've never had the opportunity to watch the Super Bowl together.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, I can neither take or leave the games that he usually watches. In fact, I usually leave him. I fall asleep on the couch while he's, mm-hmm. intent with his viewing. And he was actually taken aback by my response to the Super Bowl.
Really? Why, did you really get into it, or?
Yeah.
Really?
I'm making calls before the refs are. I'm sitting there yelling at the TV and getting frustrated with what I'm seeing. And then I was like, okay, three more plays and there's going to be an interception. I can guarantee it, And he thought, he just was looking at me
like you're crazy.
You're crazy. What are you talking about? Why don't you go take a nap? I mean, that's just what he expected from me, and it was actually pretty funny because he sat there at one point with his chin on his chest and his eyes wide open, and like, where did this person come from?
now with the Super Bowl, which one of those ads stood out for you the most? Did you watch all those ads?
Let's see, there were a couple of them. I liked the little takeoff on the Benny Hill.
Yeah, that was good.
I think that one was funny. And I don't know. I like the one or two of the Budweiser ones with the horses.
Oh, the Clydesdale, yeah. What about the Jessica Simpson one, huh?
You know what? I don't even remember it.
Oh, no. Yeah, she was walking in with the pizza from whatever the hell it was, Domino's or whichever one it's from. And you may remember, and she's like walking up to this kid, this teenager, this boy with a piece of pizza, and like he faints because she's feeding him a piece of pizza. Yeah.
Sorry, Jessica just doesn't do it for me.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, she does it for me.
You know what?
What?
It's time to officially retire that freaking song.
Oh. Yeah. It's now. What you said in your talking points to me, dare I mention Craig Ferguson? Are you the groupie that loves Craig Ferguson?
I'm not a groupie.
Oh.
I'm like a super fan.
No, because we had Philip Wynn on, and I think you're the one that's really into Craig.
I think he called me a stalker.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's got a good program, and I really admire the way he came back, you know, after his father passed away and did the whole. I thought that was wonderful.
Wasn't that amazing?
Yeah, it was.
That was probably one of the best shows I've ever seen,
yeah.
And I mean, talk about laughing and crying at the same time.
Yeah,
I thought that was a wonderful tribute to his father and. Just to the whole father-son or parent-child dynamic. It was just amazing, and it was actually really moving.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really happy when they put that up on the CBS website.
Yeah.
So that I could show it to other people. Not that I don't have it on tape, but still.
Now,
I could just send a link to somebody saying, here, watch this.
Now, how do you like his show? I mean, how's his show, I mean, compared to, he's on after Letterman. Do you like the way he took over from Craig Kilborn, and then Kilborn took over from Tom Snyder? Do you like the way Ferguson has taken over the program?
I do. Mm. And first off, nobody will ever replace Tom Snyder in my book.
Yes.
But I'll tell you what, Craig Ferguson has done such a great job. He's brought back so much warmth and humor to late night. He's quick. He's just to the point. He's quick on his feet. He's moving around. He's topical. He's personal.
Mm-hmm.
He's personable. And it's something that reminds me more of Carson.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny Carson, not the other one.
Carson Daly.
We don't talk about the other one. But he reminds me more of Johnny Carson than anybody else that's been on late night TV.
Mm-hmm.
Just as far as his genuine interest in his guests and the way he's able to draw them out,
which is
really interesting. I mean, I've never seen somebody so truly interested in their guests to the point where, I mean, he's jumping on little things they say, and he gets excited about them, and that he takes them off on some little journey, and they suddenly forget that they're on TV, and it's like they're sitting around in somebody's living room just having just sitting around talking.
Yeah, I really like his programming. I know his ratings have climbed up a bit since the show about his father. He's been going up and down, but his ratings have steadily climbed. Now, whatever happened to the story about Shadow Stevens going to be his co-host?
He's actually not his co-host.
Oh.
He's his announcer, and he is doing the announcing. I was really hoping that they were going to start doing some sketches together because Shadow Stevens is just very, very funny.
Yeah.
I've been a fan of his since he was doing the Federated Group commercials.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you even knew him from any of those, but if you go to his website.
I knew him from Hollywood Squares.
This predates Hollywood Squares even.
Oh, really?
He did these fantastic commercials it was the store, they were the Federated Group stores, essentially it was like a home electronics store, and he played a character called Fred Rated. And, you know, it's not very often you can have, you know, the Attack of the Killer Frogs, and, you know, his Super Bowl commercials were always very funny. And strangely,